Now moving to the goals for the Indian mission. Mr. Moderator, we would like the privilege of introducing one who will comment briefly to these goals. I'd like to introduce at this time the Reverend Dr. Cecil Corbett, who is a member of the Nez Perce tribe, graduate of Huron College, the Buke School of Theology, received his Doctor of Divinity from his alma mater in June of 1968. Been a pastor in Arizona, 3 years chairman of the National Advisory Committee on Indian Goals, an ecumenical body established by the Division of Christian Life and Mission of the National Council of Churches. He's presently associate director of the Cook Christian Training School in Tempe, Arizona, and on the part-time staff of the Division of Church Strategy and Development. I introduce to you, Mr. Moderator, the Reverend Cecil Corbett.
Mr. Moderator, fathers and brethren, it is hard to pour out one's heart in such a short time, but I will attempt to do so because I know that the items are very important that will be coming before you. I would like to begin with the Cherokee Indian Memorial that had been presented to the U.S. Congress. It is entitled Between Two Worlds. In truth, our cause is your own. It is the cause of liberty and of justice. It is based upon your own principles, which we learn from yourselves. For we have glory to count your Washington and your Jefferson our great teachers. We have practiced their precepts with success, and the result is manifest. The wilderness of forest has given place to comfortable dwellings and cultivated fields. Mental culture, industrial habits, and domestic enjoyments have succeeded the rudeness of the savage state. We have learned your religion also. We have read your sacred books. Hundreds of our people have embraced their doctrines, practiced the virtues they teach, cherished the hopes they awaken. We speak to the representatives of a Christian country, the friends of justice, the patrons of the oppressed, and our hopes revive and our prospects brighten as we indulge the thought. On your sentence, our fate is suspended. On your kindness, on your humanity, on your compassions, on your benevolence, we rest our hopes. This was presented to the U.S. Congress back in 1835. The American Indian did not receive citizenship until 1924, a stranger in his own land. In 1934, he was told that he would have the right to govern himself, but this was only a false hope. The real power remained with the agency superintendent. Not until 1964 were the tribes really able to plan and implement their dreams that had been piling up since 1934. It was in 1964 that the National Indian Goals Study began in St. Louis, Missouri. It was begun through the Division of Christian Life and Mission of the National Council of Churches in cooperation with Father J.B. Tenley of the Bureau of Roman Catholic Indian Missions. It was historic in the sense for the first time a national committee also had American Indians on the committee. Among others, the Indian Goals highlight several concerns, and I do not want to go through that report, but just to lift up shortly and briefly these concerns. Right of self-government, right to make decisions, even right to be wrong, but also the right to be right. Against paternalism, for so long the mission has been to Indians and for Indians, and has not been with Indians or by Indians. The Indian people want a place in American history, not just to look back with nostalgia, but to be proud of their heritage and of their contribution to this great nation. The Indian population is young. One half of our population is under 17 years of age. Almost one half of the Indian population is now living away from the reservation. We must begin to develop urban work with our Indian people. The ministry to the American Indian must be developed ecumenically wherever possible. The church has been a divisive force on the reservation. We must not project the image of a divided Christ. So often in Indian affairs, the population has pointed the finger only at the government when they see the plight of the American Indian. But there have been two forces on the reservation that have been somewhat paternalistic. These two forces have been the federal government and the Western Church. Each have made their contributions. Both have their faults. In the history of Indian affairs, there have been two policies affecting the Indian people. Number one, extermination. In Governor William Bradford's speech of those first colonialists, he wrote to them saying, "Concerning the killing of those poor Indians, of which we heard at first by report, and since by more certain relation, oh, how happy a thing had it been if you had converted some before you killed any." "The only good Indian is a dead Indian," says the cry of the West. The second policy affecting American Indians has been termination. In 1953, in Hobbs' concurrent resolution 108, the congressman felt the Indian should sink or swim. And this sounds good, but how many of you would like to try to learn to swim with a weight tied to your ankles? It would be all right to be given the right to sink or swim if you were going to start swimming from the top of the water rather than at the bottom with the weights of indifference, apathy, poverty, poor education, discrimination, and dehumanization. I propose a new policy, and this is the centrality of the Indian Goal Study, that the American Indian be given the right of self-determination, an opportunity to serve on boards and agencies, on committees for which so long have plotted their destiny. The American Indian has been waiting patiently for justice and mercy in this land. He has been told to wait, to keep things in perspective. He has been lying by the wayside for so long, suffering from indifference, even contrary to what President Johnson said last evening. The priest or the church has passed him by for the most part. The Levite or the federal government has ignored him as much as possible. Could it be that a good Samaritan by the name of Martin Luther King Jr. has come along to ask the Indian to join him on the journey to Jericho? It was my privilege to meet Dr. King in Atlanta concerning the Poor People's Campaign. Last night, I went to a nearby community center to visit with 57 Indian people who are on their way to Washington. In this group, there is an Indian lady, 101 years old, and she said, "I want to see something done for my people in my lifetime." The Indian people do have a dream that someday all will be brothers. Not just black power, red power, yellow power, or whatever color power, but maybe God is calling for us, for the church, to use almighty power, the power of love and concern for one's neighbor. Then there will be technicolor power, for we shall be one in God. And we speak to the representatives of a Christian country. The friends of justice, the patrons of the oppressed, and our hopes revive and our prospects brighten as we indulge the thought, on your sentence, our fate is suspended. On your kindness, on your humanity, on your compassions, on your benevolence, we rest our hopes. Thank you.